Hey everybody, welcome to season 6 of the Classes of Male podcast. Dude, I've been waiting to start season 6 for so freaking long because I've just been waiting for the JCAM to come out. We got the new contract. I wanted to read the JCAM again, and now it's finally here and we can read it together. Now, I've read the JCAM before on Classes of Male, but a couple of important things have changed since then. The big one being that the audio quality of the podcast is just much better. And so I'd like to record it with better audio quality. I'd also like to change the way I record it a little bit in that it's going to be a more annotated version where I'm going to discuss some of the things that we're reading rather than just trying to give a plain straight reading. And then the third thing is, based on a lot of feedback I received from the first time, our friend the Southern Gentleman is going to be reading the entire time instead of just selected sections because I know how popular that was with most of my listeners. Oh, no, wait. That's the opposite. That will be the only appearance of an accent in this reading because one of the things I learned the first time, and I did eventually pick this up, is that the entire JCAM carries the force of the contract, not just the contractual language, but all the interpretation around it. All of it is fully enforceable, and for all practical purposes, the entire thing is the contract. Plus, if I wanted to do different voices this time, now that I have my new mixing console,
I can do things like this, and that could be the different voice that I read. Or I can go the other direction,
and that could be the different voice that I use.
But I'm not going to do any of that. It's going to be my regular voice, and we are going to read together. So, just like the first time through, we'll see how much we get through. We are going to read this together, and, well, I mean, we're going to read the entire thing. It's just a question of how many episodes it's going to take. So, let's get started. Okay, so that may be something that I do going forward. I don't know if I'm going to stick with that little sounder to break up the sections. So anyway, here we go. Page 1 of the JCAM. This is before we even get into the contract. I'm reading the whole thing. So this is like the opening like preamble or something. December 2025, and it's addressed to NALC shop steward and delivery unit manager. Regarding December 2025 edition of the USPS NALC Joint Contract Administration Manual, enclosed is the revised December 2025 edition of the Joint Contract Administration Manual, JCAM, for your use as a resource in your local administration of the national agreement. Jointly prepared by the NALC and the Postal Service, the narrative portions of the manual explain how the contract should be applied based on national level grievance settlements, arbitration awards, and agreements. One copy has been provided to your delivery unit for the use of both the NALC and management. It should be accessible to both at all times. When a dispute arises, you should go to the JCAM first to see if the issue and dispute is addressed. If the issue was addressed in the JCAM, any dispute should be resolved in accordance with that guidance. All right, so already right here, this speaks to, there's one more paragraph, but this speaks to, we have a contract. We already have an agreement between the union and management. Both parties agreed that this is the way we're going to run things. And yet, management chooses to violate this all the time. And right here in the preamble, hey, if there's a disagreement about a contractual issue, consult the JCAM. Yeah, no kidding. And then you go to the JCAM, management's wrong, but they do it anyway. And you know management does it even when they know they're wrong because we win the same grievances again and again and again. And so it comes across as, let's say, disingenuous. All right, moving on. Please replace prior editions of the JCAM with the enclosed 2025 edition. The JCAM will continue to be updated with additional material as we continue to narrow our differences and expand our joint understanding of the national agreement at the national level. We encourage you to use the JCAM to ensure local contract compliance and to foster more professional working relationships. And this was signed by Michael J. Elston, the Vice President of Labor Relations for the Post Office, and Brian L. Renfro, the President of the NALC. And here we go. USPS-NALC Joint Contract Administration Manual. That's a little separator. I kind of like that. All right. We are already up to the fourth page. Is this page one? No, this isn't even on the numbered pages yet of the JCAM. It just is introduction. All right, here we go. Introduction. This jointly prepared USPS/NALC Joint Contract Administration Manual, JCAM, supersedes all previous editions. Publication of the JCAM was undertaken in good faith in order to educate the local parties and facilitate the resolution of disputes concerning issues on which the national parties are in agreement. While the parties at the national level still dispute the proper application of some portions of the collective bargaining agreement, there are significant areas of agreement. The JCAM represents the party's effort to inform labor and management in the field of these areas of agreement and encourage consistency and compliance with the issues treated. The narrative explanation of the collective bargaining agreement contained in the JCAM should be considered dispositive of the joint understanding of the parties at the national level. So dispositive is a word that you may not encounter very often. It is like as in the disposition. This is the disposition of this agreement. This is like evidence of what we agree on. So you can cite that because it is dispositive of the joint understanding. Moving on. Some sections of the contract do not have a narrative explanation. No inference should be drawn from the lack of explanatory language. The actual language contained in the collective bargaining agreement appears in text boxes. Shaded contract language means the provision does not normally apply to the city letter carrier craft. All right, so just like with the first time, I'm going to skip those if they don't apply to us. But I'm going to make an effort to read everything. I think there's probably also, just so you guys know, I'm reading this raw. Like, this is the first time I'm encountering this, and I'm just reading it with you. Because it's already a long enough project. I don't need to read it twice. So I'm encountering it the same time as you. I assume there's going to come up stuff like there was last time, where there's like a list of every post office, and I don't need to go through that. Moving on. The actual language contain... Okay, we got that. The small text boxes found in the right-hand margin next to contract language identifies where the memos referenced in the contract language text boxes are located in the JCAM. The JCAM is self-explanatory and speaks for itself. Without exception, no testimony shall be permitted in support of the content, background, history, or any other aspect of the JCAM the JCAM's narrative. The parties at the national level will update the JCAM at least once during the term of the national agreement. I guess that's what this is. It's been updated once, as our agreement is about to expire. Good times. The parties at the local level should exercise caution to ensure that they are working from the most current issue of the JCAM and apply any revisions or modifications prospectively from the date of revision. All right, so just to reiterate that, this JCAM will be different in some ways from previous versions, and the current version of the JCAM is what holds, of what's enforceable. All right, with all that done, we move on to Article 1. I kind of like that. I don't know if I'm going to keep doing it. Article 1, Union Recognition. Preamble. This agreement, referred to as the 2023 National Agreement, is entered into by and between the United States Postal Service, hereinafter referred to as the employer, and the National Association of Letter Carriers, AFL-CIO, hereinafter referred to as the Union. Pursuant to an arbitration award issued March 21st, 2025, in accordance with the terms of this award, the agreement is effective as of the date of the award unless otherwise provided. Article 1, Union Recognition. Section 1.1, Union. The employer recognizes the National Association of Letter Carriers, AFL-CIO, as the exclusive bargaining representative of all employees in the bargaining unit for which it has been recognized and certified at the national level, City Letter Carriers. Okay, so to comment on this for just a sec, I did an episode once, it was titled, I think, like Scabs and Ashtrays or something like that. And it talked about the duty that the union has to represent all carriers, because we're given this right as the NALC to be the exclusive bargaining party. And whatever the NALC agrees to, all the carriers are bound by that agreement. Whatever work rules the NALC agrees to, everybody's bound by those same work rules, whether you're in the union or not. And there's no such thing as, oh, I'm going to drop out of the union and get a better deal. Whatever deal the union gets, that's your deal. So because the union has this position of power, they also have a tremendous responsibility to represent all carriers. Because again, whether you're in the union or not, the union is your representative. And so the union has that obligation to represent you, whether you're in the union or not. All right, now we go on to some commentary. The written commentary, not my commentary. The Postal Reorganization Act of 1970, PRA, transformed the Post Office Department into an independent establishment of the government of the United States, the United States Postal Service. The PRA also gave postal employees the right to bargain collectively over their wages, hours, and working conditions. The law states that the Postal Service, quote, shall accord exclusive recognition to a labor organization when the organization has been selected by a majority of the employees in an appropriate unit as their representative, end quote. This PRA mandate followed the concept of exclusive recognition that had long served as the basis for collective bargaining in the private sector. The doctrine holds that only one labor organization can represent, quote, all employees in such unit for the purposes of collective bargaining in respect to rates of pay, wages, hours of employment, or other conditions of employment, end quote. It's from the Labor Management Relations Act, Section 9A. So to, again, comment on my own, this is, you know, Article 1 is what gives the union the right to act on our behalf. Next. NALC is the exclusive bargaining agent representing city delivery carriers. Although NALC membership is not limited to members of the city letter carrier craft, NALC is the exclusive representative of all city letter carriers. The only organization entitled to represent letter carriers in their collective bargaining relationship with the U.S. Postal Service. Despite the doctrine of exclusive representation, Article 17.2.E provides that a steward may be designated to represent a craft other than the steward's own if the unions involved approve and notify the Postal Service in writing. So we'll get to that when we get to Article 17. But that essentially means, like, if the APWU has no steward in your office, that you may be able, if the NALC and the APWU agree, you may be able to represent clerks too, or vice versa. Next, the positions currently designated in the letter carrier craft, and thus within the jurisdiction of NALC for representational purposes, are listed in Article 41.1.8. Article 1.1 does not speak directly to the question of the precise jurisdiction of NALC or of those unions which are exclusive bargaining representatives for other groups of U.S. Postal Service employees. Other unions exclusively representing large national groups of Postal Service craft employees are APWU, American Postal Workers Union, clerks, maintenance employees, and motor vehicle employees. NPMHU, National Postal Mail Handlers Union. That's mail handlers. There you go. That makes sense. NRLCA, National Rural Letter Carriers Association. Guess who they represent? It's the rural letter carriers. And And that's it. Okay. NALC and unions representing these other postal crafts all negotiated together and executed joint national agreements with the U.S. Postal Service covering the periods 1971 to 73 and 73 to 75. The NRLCA bargained separately for its 1975 to 78 agreement. In 1978, 81, 84, 87, and 90, NALC and APWU, the Joint Bargaining Committee, negotiated jointly while the unions representing mail handlers and rural carriers negotiated separate agreements. In 1994 and thereafter, NALC negotiated and arbitrated its national agreements separately from the APWU. Presently, each of the four major postal unions has a separate national agreement with the Postal Service. So this is something that you'll hear NALC candidates talk about from time to time, is maybe we should get back together and increase our bargaining power by all of us bargaining together. Instead of separating out into four different crafts, you know, maybe we would have more strength if we bargained as one giant unit. And maybe that's true, maybe it's not. You know, to hear NALC historians talk about it, when we separated out from the other crafts, it was to advocate for ourselves, that say, hey, we do harder work, and so we deserve higher pay than these other crafts, so we don't want to be lumped in with them because we don't deserve what they're getting. We deserve even better than what they're getting. And at least based on the, you know, where we stand now, I mean, we do have higher top-end pay, but APWU has a lot higher bottom pay. So, you know, you take the good with the bad, I guess. All right. Moving on. 1.2, Section 2, Exclusions. The employee group set forth in Section 1 above does not include, and this agreement does not apply to, 1. Managerial and supervisory personnel. 2. Professional employees. 3. Employees engaged in personnel work in other than a purely non-confidential clerical capacity. 4. Security guards as defined in Public Law 91-375-1201-2. 5. All postal inspection service employees. 6. Employees in the supplemental workforce as defined in Article 7. 7. Rural letter carriers. 8. Mail handlers. 9. Maintenance employees. 10. Special delivery messengers. 11. Motor vehicle employees. Or 12. Postal clerks. Managerial and supervisory personnel are excluded from the bargaining unit by the terms of Article 1.2, as well as by the provisions of the Postal Reorganization Act, see 39 U.S.C. 1202-2. However, letter carriers serving in a temporary supervisory position, 204-B, are still considered to be craft employees and continue to accrue uninterrupted seniority in the letter carrier craft, Article 41.1.A.2. And then there's a bunch of citations here. So just like the first time I read the JCAM, when I get to these citations, like, let me just read one. For example, I'm going to read you these citations. And then after this, you'll see why I'm not going to read these going forward. If you want to see the citations, go look in the JCAM for yourself. This is on page 1-3, and you can see the citations. And for that matter, there are times where I may misspeak, you know, where I'm reading it and I may use the wrong word. So you should always check the JCAM for yourself when it's critical, like for a grievance or something. Okay, so here's the citation. FASR, NB-S-6859, June 30th, 1970, or 1977, C-03288. Aaron, H1N-47-C-8187, March 22nd, 1985, C-04925. And Mittenthal, A8-W-939, January 27th, 1982, C-00580. Dude, all that stuff is not helpful. If you need the citations, you come and look them up. I'm just going to say that there are citations. Members of the supplemental workforce, which was previously defined as being comprised of casuals, are excluded from the bargaining unit. The supplemental workforce, casuals, was eliminated effective December 10th, 2007 by the Memorandum of Understanding regarding Article 7.1. And here is that memorandum of understanding between the USPS and the NALC regarding Article 7.1. The parties agree that the November 21st, 2006 effective date of the national agreement does not apply to the employment of transitional employees or the elimination of the supplemental workforce, casuals. The parties further agree that no city letter carrier casuals will be on the rolls later than December 9th, 2007. Any dispute over the beginning date for city letter carrier casuals may be addressed only by the parties at the national level. Date, September 11th, never forget, 2007. 1.3, Section 3, Facility Exclusions. This agreement does not apply to employees who work in other employer facilities which are not engaged in customer services and mail processing, previously understood and expressed by the parties to mean mail processing and delivery, including but not limited to headquarters, area offices, information service centers, Postal Service Training and Development Institute, Oklahoma Postal Training Operations, Postal Academies, Postal Academy Training Institute, Stamped Envelope Agency, supply centers, mail equipment shops, or mail transport equipment centers. All right. So as a former academy instructor, it appears, well, it doesn't say carrier academy. It's Postal Academy Training Institute. So I guess this would be like detail work that you might do that's in some other area where the rules in this contract don't necessarily apply. Section 4, Definition. This is 1.4. Subject to the foregoing exclusions, this agreement shall be applicable to all employees in the regular workforce of the U.S. Postal Service as defined in Article 7 at all present and subsequently acquired installations, facilities, and operations of the employer, wherever located. Article 1.4 provides that, subject to the exclusions listed in Article 1, Sections 2 and 3, all members of the regular workforce as defined in Article 7.1.A are members of the bargaining unit. Article 7.1 defines the regular workforce as being comprised of full-time, part-time regular, and part-time flexible employees. Full-time flexible employees are also part of the regular workforce. In addition, city carrier assistant employees are members of the bargaining unit, as provided for in Article 7.1.C. Okay, so there is a distinction here. I don't know how important it is, but the regular workforce doesn't include CCAs. They are just members of the bargaining unit, which is like members of the NALC. The NALC has the right to represent them, but they are not part of the regular workforce. 1.5, Section 5, New Positions. A, each newly created position shall be assigned by the employer to the national craft unit most appropriate for such position within 30 days after its creation. Before such assignment of each new position, the employer shall consult with the union for the purpose of assigning the new position to the national craft unit most appropriate for such position. The following criteria shall be used in making this determination. So, guys, what we're talking about here with a new position would be like a whole new job, like astronaut. You know, okay, which craft should be the astronaut? So we're not talking about new, like, assignments within a craft. Okay, so this is how they determine it. One, existing work assignment practices. Two, manpower costs. Three, avoidance of duplication of effort and make work assignments. Four, effective utilization of manpower, including the Postal Service's need to assign employees across craft lines on a temporary basis. Five, the integral nature of all duties which comprise a normal duty assignment. Six, the contractual and legal obligations and requirements of the parties. B, the union shall be notified promptly by the employer regarding the assignments made under this provision. Should the union dispute the assignment of the new position within 30 days from the date the union has received notification of the assignment of the position, the dispute shall be subject to the provisions of the grievance and arbitration procedure provided for herein. Article 1.5 requires that before assigning a new position to the most appropriate national craft bargaining unit, the Postal Service must consult with the NALC. Additionally, it contains standards that must be used in making assignments of new positions to the appropriate unit, and provides that the NALC will be promptly notified of the decision as to which bargaining unit a new position has been assigned. Any dispute to that assignment is grievable at the national level within 30 days from the date the union receives notification of the assignment. As we read this, there's like 40,000 cases backlogged right now in the grievance system. And so if we had to disagree with some new assignment, would we wait like a year to find? Dude, what a mess. 1.6.A, Section 6, Performance of Bargaining Unit Work. A, supervisors are prohibited from performing bargaining unit work at post offices with 100 or more bargaining unit employees, except one, in an emergency, two, for the purpose of training or instruction of employees, three, to assure the proper operation of equipment, four, to protect the safety of employees, or five, to protect the property of the USPS. Okay, supervisors are prohibited from performing bargaining unit work at post offices with 100 or more bargaining unit employees. So most post offices have less than 100 employees at that office. Only the biggest stations, like here in Las Vegas, like Michael's station, has over 100. My station doesn't, and my station's pretty good sized. Well, let's see what the commentary is on here. The prohibition against supervisors performing bargaining unit at work also applies to acting supervisors, 204B. The PS Form 1723, which shows the times and dates of the 204B detail, is the controlling document for determining whether an employee is in a 204B status. A separate PS Form 1723 is used for each detail. A single detail may not be broken up on multiple PS Form 1723 for the purpose of using a 204B on overtime in lieu of a bargaining unit employee. Article 41.1.A.2 requires that a copy of the PS Form 1723 be provided to the union at the local level. An acting supervisor, 204B, may not be used in lieu of a bargaining unit employee for the purpose of bargaining unit overtime. An employee detailed to an acting supervisory position will not perform bargaining unit overtime immediately prior to or immediately after such detail on the day he or she was in a 204B status, unless all available bargaining unit employees have been utilized. Okay, so to step out here, this is something that happens. This happened at my station, where our 204B cased a route. Our 204B was delivering some mail, like when we were super shorthanded. And that is not okay. That they are not allowed to do that. That should absolutely be a grievance, and this is some of what you would cite in that grievance. However, an employee may work bargaining unit overtime, otherwise consistent with the provisions of Article 8, on the day before or the day after a 204B detail. And there are citations here. Now, mind you, this is the day before or after their detail has begun or ended. All right. Branches that wish to determine whether a post office has 100 or more bargaining unit employees should contact their national business agent. The settlement agreement, blah, blah, blah. That's another citation. M-206 between the NALC and USPS, which was intended to be of general application, provides that, quote, where additional work hours would have been assigned to employees but for a violation of Article 1.6.A, and where such work hours are not de minimis, the employee whom management would have assigned the work shall be paid for this time involved at the applicable rate, end quote. De minimis means trifling, unimportant, inconsequential. So I had an argument with my branch over the meaning of de minimis, and 15 minutes is not de minimis, right? De minimis would be like if a carrier drops a letter on the floor and the supervisor picks it up and hands it to him. Yeah, that carrier or the supervisor did some work that a clerk is, or you know, that a carrier is supposed to do. That's de minimis, where you're talking a matter of a couple of seconds. Okay, moving on. An emergency is defined in Article 3.F as, quote, an unforeseen circumstance or a combination of circumstances which calls for immediate action in a situation which is not expected to be of a recurring nature, end quote. And it's that recurring nature where we talk about management violating the rules and it's, oh, but it was an emergency. Yeah, well, this goes on all the time. That emergencies don't work that way. 1.6.B. B, in offices with less than 100 bargaining unit employees, supervisors are prohibited from performing bargaining unit work except as enumerated in section 6.8.1 through 5 above or when the duties are included in the supervisor's position description. Okay, 6.A, 1 through 5. So we go back to those. Oh, so even if you have less than 100, they still can't do that work unless it's an emergency for training an employee. Wait, let me make sure I'm reading that right. Okay, if you have less than 100 bargaining unit employees, supervisors are prohibited from performing bargaining unit work except as enumerated, yeah, in that section above. Yeah, so there you go. Or when the duties are in their position description. Great. Okay. Article 1.6.B prohibits supervisors in offices with less than 100 bargaining unit employees from performing letter carrier bargaining unit work except for the reasons enumerated in Article 1.6.8.1 through 5 or when the duties being performed are included in the supervisor's position description. All right, so let me go back up to Section 6A. Supervisors are prohibited from performing bargaining unit work at post offices with 100 or more bargaining unit employees except 1 through 5. So whether you have more than 100 or less than 100, it's the exact same rules in both. That's kind of redundant. Okay. Moving on. The Step 4 decision, M-200, provides that no matter what appears in a supervisor's job description, it does not authorize the supervisor to perform bargaining unit work as a matter of course every day, but rather to meet established service standards. Furthermore, the pre-arbitration settlement, M-832, provides that where the phrase distribution tasks or, quote, may personally perform non-supervisory tasks, end quote, is found in a supervisor's job description, this does not include casing mail into letter carrier cases. Guys, that is the end of Article 1. That took about 30 minutes, which is what I shoot for. Dude, we're off to a pretty good start. And season 6 is going to be the entire JCAM, so settle in. I mean, it will be interspersed with other episodes, but we're going to read this whole JCAM from cover to cover, and we're going to get more familiar with it. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited to read more. And frankly, these are reasonably easy episodes for me because all I'm doing is reading. And so that's nice too. So that's what I have for today, guys. Thank you very much for listening, and I will catch you all next time.